Omaha Public Radio presents another program from the Durham Museum Lecture Series on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by Peggy Adair, past president of the League of Women Voters of Nebraska and president-elect of the League of Women Voters of Greater Omaha. The title of her presentation will be Cornfields, Catfights, and Cantankerous Old Coots. Ms. Adair will talk about the events which led up to the ratification by Nebraska of the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution in 1920, granting women the right to vote. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, April 2, 2013, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Durham Museum, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Mike Irwin, Distance Learning Coordinator at the Durham Museum.
Cornfields, Catfights, and Cantankerous Old Coots. The women's suffrage movement in Nebraska was slow. It was so slow that Nebraska was one of the last states west of the Missouri River to affirm the voting rights of women. The reason for this syrupy pace of women's suffrage in Nebraska was they were complex and sometimes comical. Lawyers furiously fought to keep women out of the state's updated constitution. That was even after the 19th Amendment. These cantankerous old coots were determined to close the barn door after the horses were out, so to speak. So they were already out. And then there were the catfights and, of course, the voters in the cornfield. So this evening we have Peggy Adair is going to be our speaker today. Peggy Adair is a freelance writer, graphic artist, and photographer. She's a past president of the League of Women Voters in Nebraska and president-elect of the League of Women Voters in Omaha. She served as a state director of Nebraska Right to Vote Project and is a member of Nebraska's Help America Vote Act Commission. Peggy's a registered lobbyist for the League of Women Voters and has a political blog, and I had to look this up, entitled Today on the Ledge. I thought it was Edge, but it's on the ledge, so great. She's received the Intellectual Freedom Award from the National Council of Teachers of English, the President's Award from the Academic Freedom Coalition of Nebraska, and Make a Difference Award from the Nebraska Court-Appointed Special Advocate Association. This part's easy. She likes to ride bicycles, play tennis, pet cats, feed birds, and likes chocolate. Welcome, Peggy. By the way, one more thing. I do have a microphone. Don't be afraid, because we are recording this on KIOS, and if you have a question, we'll go ahead and I'll pass the mic around. So that's my job.
Yes, and feel free to ask questions at any time. Just shortly about the League of Women Voters. We began as a direct result of the passage and the ratification of the 19th Amendment in 1920. One reason that had been proposed for denying voting rights to women was because people said, well, women don't know anything about the issues, and they don't even know about the voting process. And that actually was a valid argument, because women didn't know a lot about the issues, and they didn't know how to vote, because they never had. So the League of Women Voters started so that women could inform themselves about the voting process and also learn about the various issues that impacted them, so they could study those issues and they could collect information and come to some consensus on the issues so that they could make a good judgment about public policy. The League is nonpartisan. That means we do not endorse political parties or political candidates. We accept membership from anyone who is of voting age, including men. We like men. Men were the ones who conferred voting rights on women in 1920, a mere 144 years after our nation was born. It took the League 52 years to forgive them for that 144-year stretch. And in 1972, the League finally decided, well, those old farts were dead that, you know, never did grant us the right to vote. And their sons and their grandsons are a lot cuter and a lot smarter, so we allow men to participate now in the League of Women Voters. So y'all are welcome to join. I do have a few membership brochures with me tonight. So we do a lot more than protecting voting rights. We do work on issues. We have issue statements on immigration, urban affairs, ag affairs, child care. We have a plethora of issues that you can become involved in should you be interested. So, does anybody know in this room what the Nebraska state motto is? And here's a hint. It is not Go Big Red. Good job. Equality before the law. Does anybody know when Nebraska became a state?
1867.
Good job. What was the year that women gained the right to vote in Nebraska? So, 53 years after statehood, women got equality before the law in Nebraska. I'm going to kind of combine the voting rights in the nation with the voting rights in Nebraska because they all kind of mesh together. So, early years in America, there were actually some women who were able to vote in some of the early states, 1776, 1777. Women who owned property were able to vote in some of those states. Women who owned property were single women and widows. Because once a woman married, her property went to her husband. She kind of went to her husband as property. United States Constitution. Does anybody know what the first... You didn't know you were going to have a test tonight, did you? But first three words of the United States Constitution. We the people. The Constitutional Convention in 1789, they couldn't come to any consensus of what to do about voting qualifications, and so they left that to the states in 1789. And immediately upon leaving it to the states, all of the states, except for New Jersey, took away voting rights from all of the women. So we the people became we the people, except women, slaves, natives, people who don't own property, indentured servants, poor people. 94% of the population of the United States could not participate in the political process. In 1807, women in New Jersey actually lost their right to vote because 10 years before that, they had come out to vote en masse against a fella who was running for office. Unfortunately, he still was able to win that office, but he held that grudge, and 10 years later, he worked to revoke voting rights for women in New Jersey. So that was it. Early years of the United States, it was a struggle to survive. A lot of women weren't concerned about voting rights because they were concerned just with surviving and with helping their families to survive. Childbirth was very dangerous at that time. Virtually everybody worked at home. If you owned a bakery, if you were a seamstress, if you were a silversmith, you worked in your home. The fortunate thing about the United States in this early colonial period was that young girls did learn how to read and write and do simple math. And the reason that adults wanted young girls to do this was so that they could help out in the family business and so they could read the Bible. But that was a good thing. So at least they had some rudimentary education. Things changed a lot during the Industrial Revolution, about the 1820s, 1830s. Went from home and handmade to factory and machine-made. There were good things and bad things about the Industrial Revolution. Bad thing was the working conditions were deplorable. There was no OSHA. There were no child labor laws. So the working conditions were very difficult. The machines were dangerous. The hours were long, and there were no laws to protect the workers. One of the good things about the Industrial Revolution, though, was that women working in the factories were less isolated. They were able to come together, meet with each other, and learn about each other's concerns, and they began to organize around the issues that they were concerned about. Women were concerned, obviously, about the working conditions. They were concerned about children's education and children's health. They were concerned about human rights. They had a number of issues that they were concerned about, but then they came to the conclusion, we can't do anything about any of this unless we gain the right to vote. And so in 1847 in Seneca Falls, New York, that was the first women's suffrage convention, during which they said, it is the duty of the women of this country to secure to themselves the sacred right to the elective franchise. Now, you notice they didn't say, we want the men to give us the right to vote. They said, it is our duty to go out there and get this right to vote. So that was the beginnings. Meanwhile, in Nebraska, 1854, Nebraska became a territory. 1856, Amelia Bloomer came to visit. I'm sure you all, if you've seen the exhibit, you saw Amelia Bloomer. She was a very talented speaker. She was actually asked to come and speak to the Nebraska legislature about women's rights or any issue that she so chose. The State House was packed. She gave a 90-minute speech about that was so stirring that a local newspaper said, well, even a man could not have topped that. Miss Bloomer possessed a keen intellectual eye which seemed to flash fire from a fountain that will consume the stubble of old theories until woman is placed in her true position in the enjoyment of equal rights and privileges. So due in part, large part to that really stirring speech, a bill was introduced in the Nebraska Territorial Legislature that would have conveyed voting rights to women. It failed. Civil War. So now back to national politics. The Civil War, the end of the Civil War, we had the 14th Amendment. Most people know that as the Due Process Amendment, but there was the second article of that amendment has to do with providing a penalty for states that deny the vote to adult male citizens in federal elections. This Section 2, was never used. They never did invoke these penalties. The important piece of that, though, is the fact that that was the first time either in the United States Constitution or in amendments where the word male was used specifically and the word female was left out intentionally. It was a slap in the face to all the women who had been working for women's rights up to or women's voting rights up to that moment. And then, of course, the 15th Amendment was the one that actually granted voting rights to black male citizens. Meanwhile, back in Nebraska, 1871, the suffragists in Nebraska were able to get the ear of Lydia Butler. Lydia Butler was the wife of the governor. If you can gain the support of the wife of the governor, you've got a pretty good chance of moving your issue forward. But there was one little problem. David Butler had worked really, really hard to get the capital of Nebraska moved from Omaha to Lincoln. He worked really, really hard, and he sort of kind of, during the process, borrowed $16,000 from the state's education fund to gobble up some land around where the state capital was going to be in Lincoln, speculating that that land was going to increase in value and he could make some bucks on the side. But they found out. They found out that he had borrowed $16,000 from the education fund, and so he was impeached and he was convicted. And he was kicked out of office. So that little opportunity was gone. Wyoming. 1869, Wyoming became a territory, and it became the first territory of the United States to grant full suffrage to women. Now, most people think this was because they were feeling very altruistic and thought, you know, these women in Wyoming, they deserve this because, you know, they work side by side with the men. Well, actually, that's true. But the other piece was, in Wyoming in 1869, there were 6,000 men. There were 1,000 women. Wyoming needed a few good women. So they got to thinking, you know, what we could do is we could grant women's suffrage, and we could get all of this publicity, because national publicity, because we will be the first territory to ever do this, and we'll get some women. And so they did. So Wyoming became the first territory to, and later the first state in 1892 grant to legalize full suffrage. It was kind of like this big travel and tourism promotion. You know, come to Wyoming, where our state reptile is the horned lizard. Our state fossil is an extinct fish. Our state dinosaur is the triceratops. And women can vote. Which probably explains why Wyoming is still the least populated state in America. In case y'all are wondering, we do not have a state dinosaur in Nebraska. We do have a state beverage. Anybody know what it is? Wrong. Milk. Kool-Aid is our state soft drink. Which, if Senator Avery has anything to do with it, will soon be taxed as a non-food item. Back to the national level. 1914, 1918, World War I comes around. A lot of women are going into the workforce because men are going overseas. Oh, what year did the United States go into World War I? Very good, 1917. We were actually only there for 1 year. It was 1914 to 1918 was World War I. The United States went in 1917, so it was 1 year that we were in there. Women saw people saw that women were making an equal contribution, and they felt sincerely that they needed to have an equal voice in the political process. So things were shifting quite quickly. Plus, there was this new wave of suffragists. Alice Paul was kind of the leader of them. They were younger. They were more educated, many of them college educated, and also more determined to use confrontational tactics. They were the first group to actually ever picket the White House. They stood on the sidewalks, and they had their little signs, and they had their little sashes, and picketed the White House to gain the right to vote. President Wilson thought that was very cute, and he would tip his hat to them every morning. He opposed women's suffrage, but he just thought these young women were just adorable for a few days. And then they kept coming back and coming back. Few weeks and a few months, and nobody knows why, but one day the police came and they arrested the women who were picketing on the sidewalk and charged them with obstructing traffic. And they were hauled off to jail, and then the next day, you know, more women came and took their place, and they hauled them off to jail for obstructing traffic. They actually arrested around 500 women during this process, and about 168 of them were actually jailed. And the conditions were deplorable. The women were beaten and force-fed, and it was just terrible to conditions. And the only reason that they were in that jail in the first place was because they were trying to exercise their fundamental right to vote. It was so disturbing to the public once the public found out about this that, again, the tide was shifting in support of these young women who were fighting for the right to vote. In 1920, as you know, the 19th Amendment was ratified by one vote. Tennessee State Senator August 26 of 1920. And the 19th Amendment says, "The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." The women who had started this movement for voting rights in 1848 had all died by the time the passage of the 19th Amendment. Throughout history, some of the women's suffrage worst enemies were women who were convinced that they had all the rights they needed. Back in Nebraska, women in Omaha, many of them very affluent and very anti-suffrage, were also very well organized. They recruited other anti-suffrage women, as well as were getting more funding by holding teas and luncheons and balls at prominent hotels. The Nebraska Association opposed to women's suffrage was staffed and run by women. Its president was a woman, chair of the executive committee was a woman, and most of the members were women. Women of the early or the late 18th and early 19th centuries rarely were seen out in public. It just was unseemly for a woman to be in a public place where lots of people were gathered. There were two kind of exceptions to that. One was public parks, where they would bring their children, their families, and they would have picnics. And the other was parades. Parades were a big deal at this time in our country's history. So the suffragists in Omaha would hold these parades. And what the women of the Nebraska Association opposed to women's suffrage would do is they would dress up like suffragists, and they would sneak into these parades, and then they would just act like fools. And so all the people on the sidelines thought that they were indeed suffragists, and they were acting like fools and would embarrass the suffragists. And that was one of their tactics that they used. I don't know if you all remember, in the 1980s, there was this, not an organization, but it was a traveling troupe called Ladies Against Women. And it was a satirical group, and they would just poke fun at this fact that there were some women who just did not support other women. We're the law. We're ladies against women. And they would dress up in kind of stereotypical women's gear, and they would have these little parades. And they would chant these things such as, keep our nation right on track, one step forward, three steps back. And things like, what do we want? Nothing. When do we want it? Now. If y'all ever go on YouTube and you're tired of looking like the cute dog and cat little things, they got some of these videos on YouTube still to this day. You've got to see it. It's just adorable. Anyway, but this really happened back in the old days that they would do these parades. Suffragists held a series of meetings in Omaha in the parks. Again, that was another place that they could go out in public and they'd be okay. However, they were eventually banned from the city parks by the city parks director because he said it was his duty to keep anarchists, agitators, politics, and religion out of the parks, especially where greenhouses might be damaged by brickbats or hatpins. And so ever after, they were banned. Then you had your naysayers among the men. One member of Nebraska's Constitutional Convention said about women and voting, it is a psychological fact that women possess neither the brain nor the nerve to engage in the examination of those great questions that man has. Those great questions that man has. Bud Light. Lazy Boy. Barker Lounger. Do y'all remember bark loungers? Are they still around, bark loungers? They're comfy. Geographical distance was a problem in Nebraska. Nebraska's a long way across, and it was hard to get the message from one end of Nebraska to the other. Now, Montana is also a long way across, and they managed to get the right to vote for women in 1914. And they're actually their first woman who became a United States Congresswoman was elected in 1916. So sometimes being a long way across is really not that much of an excuse. Omaha Weekly Tribune in 1871 opined that woman's position has been fixed by those inalienable and divine laws which are higher and more absolute than any legal enactments. The vote would infect the entire social order, religion, morality, and virtue. The Omaha Weekly Herald claimed that suffrage champions were loose-jointed intellects who had been emasculated and enervated in the society of short-haired women and long-haired men, and who were quite apt to run off after this she ballot, just as a small child will stray in pursuit of a new red wagon, the wheels of which squeak. we had a lot of stuff to overcome in Nebraska. The Nebraska Men's Association opposed to suffrage. Now, I have listened to this and see if it makes sense to you, because it has never made sense to me. This is what their deal was about women's suffrage. Franchise is a privilege of government granted only to those when the government sees fit to grant it. There's a lot of twos in there, and I just, what? And then they said, well, an excitable and emotional suffrage would just destroy the republic. Anyway, opponents to women's suffrage in Nebraska included the Brewery Association, local politicians, the Catholic Church, the Lutheran Church, the Episcopal Church, business industry, pretty much everybody. Corporations opposed the right to vote because they feared women voters would vote to improve conditions for working women. I know. In 1882, the American and National Women's Suffrage Association held their convention here in Omaha. First time ever that a national convention had been proposed in Omaha, which is, of course, why they built the CenturyLink Center. Because once every 100 years or so, we get a national convention. We've got to be ready. The Chicago Times reported on the event. They said it's an influx of short-haired females and long-haired males who intend to go through the state like a cyclone. Life in a new state is not without its drawbacks. If no other plague is visited on Nebraska this year, its cup will be full. That really, gained a lot of momentum for Nebraska. And so in November of 1882, an amendment to the Nebraska Constitution was proposed that would provide for equal voting rights for women. It failed. After that, an unending series of bills was proposed every year. Each one of them was tweaked a little bit. The language was changed a little bit. They had one thing in common, and that was that they all failed. Suffrage picked up steam in Nebraska around 1914 with the automobile. The long way across thing. Well, because we had the automobile, was able to kind of shrink that a little bit. So a couple of women suffragists went around trying to find out, okay, so what's the deal in Nebraska? Why do people oppose women suffrage in Nebraska? And they came up, the four things. Women are ignorant of war and are incapable of serving their country under arms. They therefore do not deserve to vote. Women as wives and mothers are so busy raising and educating men who will vote, they have no time to learn about voting. Women are a dangerous class. They are emotional rather than rational, so the ballot in their hands would be abused. Women would be compelled by suffrage to serve on juries to the detriment of their work at home, their families, and their own moral character. So, Alice Durham Miller wrote a piece in opposition to this, saying why men should not vote. Now, men, I love y'all. I do. I'm not picking on you. This was years ago. But they said that men should not vote because man's place is in the army. Because no manly man wants to settle any question otherwise than by fighting about it. Because if men should adopt peaceable methods, women will no longer look up to them. Because men will lose their charm if they step out of their natural sphere and interest themselves in other matters than feats of arms, uniforms, and drums. Because men are too emotional to vote. Their conduct at baseball games and political conventions shows this. While their innate tendency to appeal to force renders them unfit for government. A milestone came for Nebraska women on April 21st, 1917. Governor Keith Neville signed limited presidential suffrage for women. It would allow for women to vote for Nebraska for the first time for the president of the United States. However, the Nebraska Association opposed to women suffrage, keep in mind this is mostly women, went to work on a petition to block the new law. It produced 32,000 signatures in 3 months. Enough to suspend this voting bill. Come to find out, when private detectives and election inspectors did a random sampling of condition signers, they found that many of the addresses were located in the middle of the street, in the middle of the Missouri River, some cornfields, some railroad yards, vacant lots. 68 of the names were written in the same handwriting. Some names were purely fictitious. At least 5 names were people who were dearly departed from this earth. They also found out that people were going around to young men who were not able to read and write so well and said, "This is a petition to bring back beer." So they signed it. They believed. The suffragists went to court in 1918 and sued the Secretary of State. The case, of course, rambled through the courts as usual, made it to the Supreme Court by 1919, but by then, you know, it was becoming a moot point because the 19th Amendment was rolling through United States Congress. They passed the federal amendment in June of 1919, a mere 40 years after it had been first introduced in Congress. And in June of 1919, the Nebraska Supreme Court ruled in favor of the plaintiffs in the suit against the Secretary of State, and limited suffrage for Nebraska women was upheld. However, in 1919 and 1920, the Nebraska Constitutional Convention was held to update the Constitution, because the first Nebraska Constitution had been written in 5 days, and it looked like it. So they figured, you know, we got to do something. So around March of 1920, they were working on these various proposals for amendments to the Constitution. One proposal would let women vote in separate ballot boxes to adopt these amendments to the Constitution. Another amendment, Proposal 18, would allow women to vote. Both of these proposals were strongly opposed by lawyers who said that the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution had not yet been ratified by the required 36 states. And that's true. But it had been ratified by 35 states, one of which was Nebraska. So we had already ratified this amendment to the United States Constitution, but there were still people fighting like crazy to keep women from voting, even though the handwriting was on the ballot. But at least we weren't Mississippi. Mississippi ratified the 19th Amendment on March 22nd, 1984. One of the first elections that where women were allowed to vote was a sewerage bond in Geneva. More women came to vote in that bond election than men, and the bond passed. So now when you go by Geneva, the smell that you do not smell is because women who fought for and won the right to decide for these things, like sewers and streets that can be paved and asbestos being removed from our children's schools and parks department being funded, all of those things harken back to our grandmothers and great-grandmothers who fought for our right to choose those who represent us and choose to have our voices heard and provide us equality under the law. Voting always has been and always will be inextricably tied to politics. And I'm sure, as all of you are aware, politics comes from 2 root words. Poly, meaning many, and tix, meaning blood-sucking parasites. Do y'all have any questions?
Why were so many women against it? Why were those women against it? Voting for women.
You know, it's there's a number of cultural different issues that, and you know, women today over the abortion issue fight each other. Women today over lots of political issues fight each other. Part of it was that women of affluence felt that they had all of the rights that they needed. They were afraid that rights might be taken away from them. There was a kind of a class warfare between the affluent women and the working class women, who were fighting like crazy to get these voting rights so that they could have better working conditions for themselves. So there was just a cultural conflict among the women.
And could it have been that some of their husbands insisted that they be against it too? Maybe.
I don't know that it was that so much as the women themselves. I got to give women for credit for just being jerks sometimes too. You know what I mean?
I have a question about Wyoming. So that 1,000 women, did they, with their suffrage law, did they get more women then?
You do realize that Wyoming is still the least populated state
in
the United States of America.
Well, did they get 5 more women or what?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'll have to check the census and see what they're doing.
Just wondering if it worked.
Yeah. Right. Wyoming is, Wyoming's a beautiful state, but it is very stark. It has a beautiful starkness to it, though.
You know, we have someone that is still alive that has got that movement going of being against women, and that's Phyllis Schlafly. She's come out of the woodwork again.
Yeah.
So it's a real problem. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what you were sharing, you know, when I think of what's happening today in our country, it's a big issue. It's not going away unless people really stand up. And even in our own state with the trying to limit the vote,
yes,
voter ID bill, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, we're really in jeopardy of going backwards instead of forward.
It is a constant struggle. There's a constant tension between different driving forces, and you can't just rest on your laurels and say, okay, we're done. You know, we got the vote, we're done, because there are always people out there that are looking to suppress the vote for one reason or another, and it usually has to do with personal agendas.
Do you know, and as I look in this audience, where are the young people?
Well, it's a beautiful evening. They're probably out partying somewhere.
Well, probably. But, you know, that's a real concern to me because even in my own family, I know that younger people are so involved with their own families, young families and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult. I mean, I'm not, casting any dispersions, but it concerns me because their future is in the hands of people that are making decisions that will be detrimental to them and their children, our children. Yeah. I'm a great-grandmother. So, I mean, I have a concern that we have the strongest nation that we possibly can have and have a democracy.
And one thing that I would really encourage all of you to do, if you have young people in your family, children, grandchildren, whatever, is to get the DVD called Iron-Jawed Angels. Once you watch that, your life will be changed. You will understand the tragedy that took place. These women who fought to get the right to vote, it didn't come easy. And I think young people will get it if they see that. So I'd really strongly encourage anybody to get that for their young people. Donate it to the school library. Yeah.
Did people really vote back then and they got the vote? Because, like in today's primary, they're estimating 18% people are voting. Is it because it's there, we don't even use it?
Did people vote, like, during the colonial period? And
once they got the vote, did women really go out and vote?
Did women? Yes. Not only did they go out to vote, but they affected the vote of everybody else. In 1920, there was an act that had been proposed in Congress for years and years and years, and it had to do with public health. The fourth leading cause of death in the early 1900s was bacterial infections in children under age 2. All that people needed to know was good hand washing, refrigeration of meats, just the simple hygiene things. And the way to get the word out in the early 1900s was simply door-to-door, having nurses go and teach young mothers how to care for their children. This act rested in Congress for years and years and years because they were not willing to fund it. They weren't willing to fund this program for the nurses to come door to door. 1920, when women gained the right to vote, they passed it right away. And they saved 20,000 lives in that 1 year. That's how powerful the right to vote was for women.
Hi, that Ms. Bloomer that did the 90-minute speech, other than Nebraska Historical Society, do you know where else that copy of that speech might be that she made?
No. I'd love to see it, though. She was quite an amazing woman. She actually stopped wearing the bloomers after a while. I'm sure y'all know this, because she felt like it distracted from the movement itself. So she invented them and, you know, said, hey, I invented them, I can take them off.
You know, one thing I found out is that civics has pretty much gone out of the school curriculums. Have you noticed that, too? And there is a program that Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor developed, and it's going out now to junior highs. And I don't know if Omaha Public Schools or the Millard Schools or any of the Bellevue, any of the schools have picked that up. But it sounds like that's something we really need.
Yeah, it's an excellent program that she's putting out. And as you know, because of all of the testing in the schools, the core curriculum is what they concentrate on, to the detriment of things like the humanities and history and civics. I belong to another subversive group called the Academic Freedom Coalition of Nebraska, and they're very concerned about the civic instruction that children need to be receiving, because you can't fight for your rights if you don't know what your rights are. You can't fight for anybody else's rights unless you know what your rights are, and we need civic instruction. So y'all talk to your school board members and encourage them to do that.
You know, Peggy, when you were talking about the people opposing, the industries and the different things opposing suffrage here in Nebraska, you mentioned not only the industries and government and everybody else, but I heard you list just about every single religion. I was curious to know the historical perspective on us living here in Nebraska yet, if there is a conflict yet that I feel in at this time between social justice issues and religion. If that was an element back then, and if we're still dealing with that now.
Yeah, part of the reason that Nebraska was one of the last states to actually support suffrage for women was because of our particular immigrant process that was mainly overwhelmingly white, overwhelmingly European, many Germans, many Czechs, and that culture was very patriarchal and was in extreme opposition. Compared to, say, for instance, California and Washington and Oregon, who had Oriental influx, who had Mexican influx, who had a much more diverse influx of people coming into those territories than Nebraska did. And so those were the states that saw, it wasn't just, you know, the women's suffrage, but it was, they saw that there is a diversity of cultures here, and they were more willing to support those innovative ideas where everybody should come to the table. And we were just kind of homogenous. You all are a great audience. Thank you very much for coming.
You've been listening to a program from the Durham Museum Lecture Series on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Peggy Adair, past president of the League of Women Voters of Nebraska and president-elect of the League of Women Voters of Greater Omaha. The title of her presentation was Cornfields, Catfights, and Cantankerous Old Coots. Ms. Adair spoke about the events which led up to the ratification by Nebraska of the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution in 1920, granting women the right to vote. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, April 2, 2013, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Shauna Forsberg, former Director of Marketing and Public Relations at the Durham Museum, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 300 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.